I guess that marks the end of the song. This is CITR 101.9 FM. Someone didn't set the thing to just play one song at a time. Thank you, whoever was on beforehand. Just kidding. We love each other here at CITR. Like I said, it's the Ink Stud Show. And if you've been listening to CITR regularly, you know that today is, well, this week, next week, we're in the middle of the funding drive. And this is the first Ink Stud Show during the funding drive because it started about 6 o'clock last Thursday. And I'm on it, too. So it's about 2:08. That was Gary Panter, one of my favorite cartoonists, a song he did called Tornado to the Tater. And that was recorded in the residence studio. I forget. Luke Meat was just in here saying which station it was or which studio it was at. But regardless, brother, you know, he recorded with the residents. How awesome is that? I love weird music like that, and I hope you do too. So first thing I want to do is get you to write down a phone number, 604-822-UNIT. That's 604-822-UNIT. And that is the phone number to call in and pledge money, because we need money. CITR is a non-commercial station providing the most eclectic and interesting shows that you could come across. And I think Ink Studs is a stellar example of that. Right now, I think we're the only comic book radio show on college radio in Canada. And actually, Ink Studs has since spread out and been syndicated onto several other stations whose call letters are escaping my mind right now. But trust me, we're heard in Winnipeg. I think in Windsor, too, in Calgary, and maybe Edmonton, but I can't remember. But a bunch of stations took us on because 3 years in, I think we're doing a decent thing here. And if you like what Ink Studs do, call up 822-8648. That's 604-822-8648, a.k.a. 604-UBC-UNIT. Sorry, I couldn't resist the hip-hop G-Unit styles. There are several different amounts that you can pledge to CITR. They range from $30, which you get one friend's card, which is gives you deals at all sorts of different wonderful places around Vancouver, including RX Comics and I think Lucky's Comics, both those stores. You get special discounts with the Friends of CITR card. $60, you get the Friends card, as well as a CITR t-shirt. $101.90, 101.9, you get one Friends card and one limited edition t-shirt designed by Sean Maxey, which looks pretty dope. $150 gets you two Friends cards, one t-shirt, and one limited edition t-shirt or one CITR hoodie. And $200 gets you two Friends cards, one CITR shirt, one limited edition shirt, one CITR hoodie, and one and ticket. Is that one ticket or two tickets to the party at the Biltmore finale and pre-party reception? And same as the $250, same as $200 prizes, plus an entry into grand prize draws awarded at the Biltmore finale show. Okay, so you got those amounts and you get this stuff that CITR is normally giving out to everyone that pledges money. Well, us and the Ink Studs, we like comics, and we think everyone else should like comics too. So I've been hooked up by a whole bunch of local and not-so-local folks to have stuff to give out. So with much thanks, firstly, to Raincoast Books, the book distributor. They've sent me a bunch of good goodies from Princeton Architectural Press and Drawn and Quarterly, including this wonderful art book called Hand Job, Dogs and Water by Anders Nilsson, who actually just posted a new interview with them on the website inkstuds.com. Yashiro Tatsumi's Goodbye, a wonderful, depressing collection of this Japanese cartoonist stuff from 1971. And it's gorgeous and sad and wonderful. As well with that, there's another book, Red Color Eulogy? Red Color Eulogy. Why can't I speak today? And that's also wonderful and heartbreaking Japanese stuff. And it's really interesting to see what these Japanese cartoonists were doing back in the early 70s, late 60s, in comparison to what people, most people think of Japanese comics with the manga and the Naruto and all this other pop crap. There is really some incredible, stellar storytelling to be found. On that note, heavily influenced by a lot of those guys, Adrian Tomine, we have his Shortcomings book, As well as Aya from Yop City, an art book called I Am My Family. It's a weird, crazy photo book that looks really nice. I think that one's from Chronicle Books. 365 by... that one's already gone. Never mind. Burma Chronicles by Guy Delisle or Guy Delisle. Beautiful story. Well, I don't know, beautiful. Wonderful. He told, not exactly a happy book about him and his family going to Burma and experiencing there. It's kind of a follow-up to his book about Pyongyang and Sichuan. I can't remember. The one he went to China. King City Classics. That's a mammoth book from John Porcellino, John Corley. Really beautiful mini-comics originally, and they did an incredible collection of it, collecting a whole bunch of it. This weird, crazy art book called World Unfurled, and it's like, I think it's from Chronicle Books, and you're like, it's all these maps and weird things to cities. It's odd, but very neat. Jamalti from Rudo Modan, who we'll have an interview with next month, her book Exit Wounds got so much acclaim, and Jamalti is a collection of earlier stories from anthologies, not a full story like Exit Wounds, but it's also wonderful. It's really neat to see her development from really early crude rudimentary styles to this really incredible use of patterns and lush storytelling. It's really neat. There's a really neat children's book called Once Upon a Time about a vampire. Who doesn't love vampires? I think they're flavor of the week right now. This crazy pirate pop-up book called Castaway Pirate. So if you know a kid that might like it. And so any of those books I just mentioned, you can get one of those at the $30 bid, two at the $60, and four at the 101.9. Six of those books at the 150, eight of those books at the 200 bid, or I guess 10 at the 20 or $250 bid. Plus, any bid over $100 or more gets a copy of this weird, really neat art book, limited edition to 100 copies, that this listener from the Netherlands sent to me, Joost Halbertsman, and it's really neat. It's called Crap Book. It's quite interesting to see what different people are doing around the world, and it's really quite an interesting thing. Like I said, that's really limited, so it's only people... I've only got two copies. So it's for people that bid more than $100 more. Once they're gone, they're gone. As well, I have local packages, which kind of count as two books in the scheme of things because a whole bunch of stuff. So if you bid $60 or pledge $60, you get You Ain't No Dancer 3 from New Arrival Press. I had Ed on a while ago and talking about that. So if you want to find out more info, go to inksteads.com. Histrionics, which is an anthology from Cloudscape, a local Vancouver group that includes my co-host Colin Upton. There's a story he did about his father in there, which is actually quite neat. And on top of that, my good friend Robin Bougie gave me a whole package of Cinema Sewer and Sleazy Slices. Definitely not for kids, but wonderful stuff. Anyways, and last but not least, we got two copies of the Dark Knight soundtrack. So first two people that pledge money, get them. Wow, I've done a lot of talking. So 604-822-8648. And I'm going to play, and I'm going to be playing a bunch of this ongoing interview I did with Mia Kirshner, whose book from Pantheon just came out called I Live Here. And it's got Phoebe Gleckner in it, Joe Sacco, local cartoonist Julie Morstadt, and it's gorgeous. And you'll find out more info.
This is CITR 101.9 FM, the Ink Stud Show. I'm talking to Mia Kirshner, is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And the book that you were involved in, one part of, I guess, many I Live Here, a kind of travelogue of, I don't want to say travelogue, but it's like a
paper documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of different experiences, I guess, oppression that people have faced in corners of the world.
I mean, basically, the book is it's four books, actually. Mexico, we covered Juarez, Burma, Malawi, and Chechnya. So each of the book feels like a diary or a journal. And sort of the motivation I had was having people who are displaced write for themselves and photograph themselves. And in turn, I took the material back to Vancouver, where our office is on Hastings Street. And together, myself and Mike Simons and Paul Shoebridge, formerly of Adbusters, worked on putting the chapter together. And then James McKinnon, who wrote The 100 Mile Diet, became involved about 5 years into the book.
5 years in, so you've been working on this for a long time.
Yeah, a really, really, really long time.
What was the idea behind starting it? What?
I just think I felt pretty dead creatively, and I was aware of the fact that I shouldn't be, because I had a job as an actor, I had a home, I had a comfortable life, but just uninspired. Mm-hmm. And more so this like growing feeling, or this gnawing feeling, that I didn't know a lot about the rest of the world. I was pretty ignorant and naive. And I felt the need, after September 11th happened, it was like a light bulb moment, which I'm sure a lot of people have had, where it was like, I'm pretty frightened about where we're going in the world. And my own ignorance is frightening to me, that I didn't know about all these issues that have been happening for so long that are just coming into light now because of this incident. And I felt like it was just time to change my life. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, considering that,
kind of profound moment. What was the choice of, I guess, the direction that the book took? Like the choice of countries. Like, what stood out to you about those certain situations?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it was countries in which I just felt like that were out of the eye of the media. That was the first thing. And then I would read country report after country report, and really it came down to a very emotional reaction that I had. At the time, just after September 11th, you know, Chechens often were being branded as terrorists. Mm-hmm. And it was very disturbing to me, because that's not the truth. And I really, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to go there, was to dispel that and to simply show that these were also people who had been displaced as a result of a very dirty war.
Well, and the terrorism there, quote unquote, and people don't like using the term.
No, I'm saying yeah. In quotes, what I feel, but what other people, what other sources had deemed.
Like it's a minor part of the...
It exists. It exists. It's a very dirty
But it's
war.
Kind of a result. It's a result you have of kind of having that internal displacement.
I don't know if it's a result, but I certainly felt like the people in which who were affected by the violence of both the Chechens and the Russian army, those stories were completely neglected. Mm-hmm. And they were being branded as something that they really were casualties of. So that's why I wanted to go there. Burma, it's really... Well, I mean, systematically, the Burmese government, you know, Myanmar, with the name
the
now.
The
technical term is My Burma. Mm. And that says enough as far as, you know, this government is attempting to eliminate a population. They have a policy called the Four Cuts Policy.
Which policy?
Four Cuts. So you can find this online. It's pretty well documented, where they're basically cutting off access to food, information, basic needs, so the population can't flourish. So I felt like, again, this was a place that, in particular, where women were really affected by this in the most brutal of ways. You know, I read story after story about something horrific that happens, that in these villages, these armies would come into Karen villages and shoot the family dogs because they were barking. Rice fields would be burned down, or they would be forced to give up their crops to the military there. And in turn, these Karens would flee. The men were taken away from their homes and made to forced labor and porter things, whereas the women were left there. The women, many stories about fleeing into the jungle, the malaria that would ensue, and then living in the camps, which really are such subhuman conditions in these camps.
Inkstuds, CITR 101.9 FM. Just a reminder, 604-822-8648. Pledge drive. We got lots of goodies. 822 8648. That's 604 UBC unit. And we've already doing quite well with the pledges. Someone pledged the 101.9. Thank you very much for that. One of the art books is gone. One of the limited edition ones as well. That person will be getting lots of extra goodies too because we pledged a lot of money. We'll continue with this conversation.
Now, how long has the government been in place in Myanmar?
The current government?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's changed, but I don't know. I'm not an expert on this at all. This is a better question posed to a journalist or an expert. This government,
yeah.
This government has not been democratic for a very, very long time.
No, and there's the new book by Guy Delisle about his experience there. I don't know if you've seen that yet.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Guy Delisle, he did the book about Pyongyang for Barn Quarterly.
Yes, I did read that. Yeah. Really?
So he just did one about Burma.
Oh, cool.
I started reading him that time.
Cool.
You're mentioning how you're not an expert. Is that something that you feel is kind of important as far as bringing in that viewpoint of not being an expert, but just how that hits you, that raw?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly, look, I'm an actor. That's my day job. That paid for the book. I would be misinforming others if I pretended that I knew everything about this. So the way in which I approached the book was I want to learn as much as I can. And I guess by learning, I went into these places. People wrote, people took pictures, and that was the way in which I got all my information, namely, and country reports by human rights organizations.
Talk to it, and if somebody says, well, maybe it's
understood. Sorry, that's absolutely true.
Okay.
So the work and the writing that I collected is simply, it's not meant to be this sort of grand manifesto on the political situation there. It simply represents that capsule of time and that information that I collected while I was there.
Now, the situation in Burma, it's a lot of, from what I could tell from what I was reading up on the book, it's a lot of stuff with women working the sex trade there, too.
It's interesting the ways in which a population is crushed, the attempted crushing of a population, because, you know, I expected to meet women who had been trafficked, but I didn't meet a single woman who had been trafficked into the brothels. In fact, I met mostly Burmese women, a couple of Karen women, who were there by choice. But I really say that word in quotes because...
As the only option that they have.
As the only option because there are no jobs, and they fled from their villages, and they become servants, basically. They're living in debt to the mamasons within the brothels, having to pay off the debt in order to be free. But that debt is so big and their price is so low that they're stuck. One of the sex workers said to me, why are women less than the price of a t-shirt? Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
And it shows no sign of changing.
I think that more help from where I stand, which again is it's an opinion, it appears to me that there is very little help from the international community and more needs to be done.
Kind of a little segue is the situation in Mexico, which is interesting about that is that it's so close to home. But I mean there's a lot of similarities too. They're not working in the sex trade, but basically it's young women working to support their families.
Or just working to because they want money for their own income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these women the maquiladoras, many of them are owned, most of them are owned by foreign companies.
And they're, just so people know, it's like a basically an international trade zone created in Mexico where people are, the regular, I guess, employment laws that they have in Mexico are kind of null and void there, and they can have lower...
Yes, but actually, I have to say, with the factories that I went to there, the conditions weren't what I expected. I expected sweatshop-like conditions. The one factory that I went to, because it's difficult to get access into the factories, the conditions, the lighting was good, there was music, it was clean. But it's not about the factories. It's about the fact that these women who worked in the maquiladoras are poor, they're very young, and vulnerable to violence, and they were selected because of that.
I think their preferred age that they hire is 14.
No, it's not legal to hire young those girls, but what many of the girls do is they forge the working papers, which is what Claudia Beth Gonzalez did, the protagonist of the Juarez chapter. So the ways... essentially, it was the hardest trip that I took by far, because it's you go there and it's a place where the violent things that happen to so many women over such a long period of time, with no attempt by the Mexican government to solve these murders, to curb violence against women there, is so mind-boggling.
It's been going on for
over 10 years.
Yeah, like. It's quite astonishing, like, and 10 years ago I remember stuff on it, and it was just, like, incredible amounts of women going missing just on their way home from work and just disappearing.
Yeah, and why isn't the Mexican government doing something about this? Why is this police force allowing this violence to continue? And eventually one has to ask themselves, there's no way. It appears it's too strange that evidence has been tampered with over this period of time and this many women have been killed. You know, it's been a very systematic attempt at taking advantage of people who they saw as vulnerable. But I do want to say that one of the reasons I wanted to go to Juarez was because everything I read was about the death of the girls. And I felt like I'd rather see them as living and girls that I went to school with. So that was sort of the way in which we approached the chapter with.
So focus on the life.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Now, in that one, I haven't read the book, but that one you have like a, you're saying like a diary. Is it a fictional diary or?
Well, what happened was I was pretty devastated by this trip. I had collected so much material there from the families, photographs, video, and I felt really stuck with the writing. Mm-hmm. And I kept on trying and trying, but it was just...
Kinetic extension 7268.
That's funny. I just felt stuck. And too much time was going by where I kept on opening up this material in the box, which was dirt from the cotton field and clothing and hair extensions and writing. And really, I think in a way, for some reason, it just went a little too close to the bone. And so my sister, Lauren Kirshner, who is whose book is coming out next year, is a writer, and I gave it to her. And she wrote the piece based on her reflections of being given the box and wanting to know this girl. So the piece is really a dialogue between the writing that exists between her family, Claudia's family, that was actual writing, and Lauren's observations as watching this character and wanting to know her more.
So it's a good way of getting a kind of a different viewpoint if you're getting too involved, to have someone to kind of...
As in addition to the fact that Lauren is a wonderful writer, so, and she's a young writer, so I felt like that really, she would really be able to understand where Claudia was at with her life.
That was a noisy hotel we did the interview in. People just don't seem to notice when someone's trying to have a quiet conversation and then just come on by and make lots of noise and get on their cell phone standing right next to you. Impolite. CITR 101.9 FM, Ink Studs. That was an interview, or we're listening to an interview I did with Mia Kirshner for the book I Live Here. It's kind of a look into the lives of people facing exploitation of different formats and general human rights violations in Chechnya, Malawi, Burma, aka Myanmar, and Juarez, Mexico. And actually Phoebe Gleckner, who I think we talked about there, is working on a follow-up book to it. And it's really incredible what Phoebe does in this book. And I think she's one of the most important cartoonists in the last long while that a lot of people don't really notice as much as they should. But the stuff she's doing is just 10 times beyond anyone could imagine what you could do with the media. And the story she has for this book, it's all weird dolls in these setups, and they're just the most tragic, heart-wrenching things you've ever seen. Also, as a neat connection, Mia Kirshner is on The L Word, filmed in Vancouver, and all the folks that worked on the design work for this book, which is really gorgeously designed, are from Vancouver. So it's actually kind of a Vancouver project, so it kind of suits with the general theme of Vancouverism that I tried to do during the funding drive. Just a reminder, 604-822-8648. That is 604-UBC-UNIT. And I think I'm going to play a song. It is Jay Bradley Johnson, and I forget the name of his band, but he's a cartoonist out of California, and he is featured in the new Kramer's Ergot book, which will be coming out next month. The thing is massive. You could cripple someone if you drop it on them. It's that big. Trust me, it's big. So 604-822-8648 is the number to call. Pledge. We've already got a couple of pledges, and I'd like to see more. We have a, I think it's the 15,000 fund drive. That's our target for next week, and we're already at $9,209.58. Let's see if we can beat that and do wonderments. So thanks for listening. We'll be continuing, and please call 604-822-8648. Thank you. CITR 101.9 FM. That was Love is Real, cartoonist J. Bradley Johnson, and some other folks. And I feel bad because I can't remember the name of the band. Please forgive me. Please. Funding Drive, 604-822-8648 is the number to call. And we've got lots of goodies available. Tons of books. Check it out. $30, you get a book and a friend's card from CITR. $60, you get two books, friend's card and a t-shirt. $101.9, you get one friend's card, one limited edition t-shirt, and four books as well. I have packages of local goodies that you can get as well, which features Histrionics from Cloudscape folks, which is a nice collection of goodies, and which also features Colin Upton, as well as Local Anthology, You Ain't No Dancer, Volume 3, from New Arrival Press, and Robin Bougie's Cinema Sewer and Sleazy Slice books. 604-822-8648. Now let's continue with the conversation with Mia Kirshner.
Now tell me about the work that Phoebe Gleckner did on that piece.
Phoebe?
And the choice of getting Phoebe.
Well, I you know, Phoebe's work, A Teenage Diary, like, I think that she is really, I mean, she's a phenomenal artist. She really is. She does some incredible, groundbreaking, raw, extremely sexual, truthful work. And I felt like she would be really perfect for the Walrus chapter. She said yes, and she then, you know, she basically worked on her own. You know, she kind of disappeared, and she started, and she had one concept. She pulled it back and took it away, and I guess restarted the project, and basically built what appears to be a village, Juarez, recreating it through dolls. And she created a phenomenal piece of art that is so unique and graphic and so brutal. And she just won a Guggenheim for her work on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, she's deserving.
Yeah,
I've been a fan of hers for years.
She is.
That ultimate uncomfortable feeling you get reading her work. It's just such sheer brutal honesty.
Yeah. I think, though, for me, on a personal level, Joe Sacco, for me, is Joe perhaps is the reason the book exists like this. Joe, when I read his book on Bosnia and the war, I understood the war through his writing. And he really made me think about how important it is to read very comprehensive things about these very difficult and complicated issues. Joe volunteered, was the first person that said yes to the project, gave up all his time, and came with me to Ingushetia, where at that point I had no idea what I was doing. Was so patient and really was I don't even think he knows this, such an incredible comfort and support, in addition to being this phenomenal, profoundly intelligent artist, that it was sort of mind-blowing.
He's quite a calming presence.
He's just an amazing, like, the compliments about his character I say with caution, because I don't want that to overshadow his majestic work and the power of his work.
Well, it must be quite the learning experience traveling with him out of anyone. Like, was that your first trip?
It was
your first stop?
It was, and it was in a way, like, in retrospect, how crazy to travel with this, you know, groundbreaking artist, and really having no idea what I was doing, and what probably to Joe looked like I was hauling trash bags of stuff back to my room. Because it was all about the ephemera that I was collecting in the camps and the writing, and who knows what Joe was thinking at the time. Though, at the end, he did collect a couple of objects for the book. But, I mean, I think on Joe's part, it was an incredible leap of faith. And he sent the script after he had finished. And although, again, like, I had no experience with this genre, he still asked me what I thought, and he was still open to a couple of things and suggestions that I had, but essentially profoundly grateful to Joe.
So what was the choice to work with cartoonists?
I just love comics. That's it. That's it. I love comics, and I feel like they're a really wonderful, compelling way in which to explain issues in which perhaps we might not care about.
What are some that you've really enjoyed?
These. I mean, it was really simple. I wrote to the people who I liked. That was it.
Julie Morstadt was an interesting choice.
Yeah, Mike and Paul knew her. I wasn't familiar with her work. And basically the concept was to do a children's story. And she, you know, she we gave her images, and we all gave her as much as we could from the camps, from the Malawi trip. And she really created a stunningly beautiful, inspired story.
It looks heartbreaking.
It is, but it's also about the magical minds of kids. And I'm very proud that it's a children's story about HIV, because we've been told so much about this issue, so I feel like to do it in an unusual way is very important.
So tell me a bit about your Malawi. Tell me a little bit about your Malawi trip.
Malawi.
Malawi, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm horrible.
Oh, it's okay. Me too. But it was actually the last trip, and what I thought would be a very difficult trip, because Malawi is one of the poorest countries in the world with such a high HIV AIDS rate.
20%?
Something like that. I mean, it's hard to get an accurate statistic over there. But what I found was a very beautiful country and a very safe place to travel. And everyone I came into contact with, there's a smile that I kept on seeing, which was, you know, when someone smiles at you who just has the most open smile and clear and sort of affecting and moving, and which is what I saw. I went into the prison with James McKinnon, a juvenile prison, where many of the boys had been in there for theft of porn, Nokia cell phones, rape, and murder, and they wrote about their lives. And it's just, it was an incredibly powerful and moving experience.
And that's an ongoing project, isn't that?
That is. So now, because the conditions in which the boys live in Kacheri Prison are abominable, and what speaks to those conditions is the fact that the guards let us into the prison when they weren't supposed to. They encouraged the kids to write, and then wrote themselves for the book, and painted as well, because I think they were so outraged at this treatment of these kids, the lack of school, the lack of play, the terrible food, that there is the lack of sanitation. There was a cholera outbreak in the prison. And these kids, so many of them are phenomenal. Is this okay?
Yeah, it mainly picks up what we're saying.
Okay, phenomenal, phenomenal writers. Careful with your feet. So James and I made a promise that we'd help the kids. So we set up the I Live Here Foundation.
Things just get louder and louder. It was pretty bad then. There was this whole big, huge mob of, I guess, some conference getting out. So it took about 5 minutes before they were quiet again. CITR 101.9 FM, Ink Stud, 604-822-8648. Funding drive. Reasons why. The Ink Stud specifically. Over the last 3 years, we've interviewed some of the best and brightest in cartooning. Chester Brown sat across from me in this room I'm here right now. And come on, man. Chester Brown, Ralph Steadman's been on. So many wonderful cartoonists. Joe Sacco, who we were just talking about. Seth was my first guest. And I still have pains even listening to that one. I can't listen to it. So I'm hoping Seth will be on in the new year, as well as a whole slew of other folks. I'm really happy with what we've been able to do with the Ink Studs. And really, we couldn't do it anywhere else. You'll never hear this on a regular radio station. I don't think I could ever do an interview with Robin Bougie on regular talk radio where they get ultra-conservative. And we're a little more easygoing here at CITR. It's It's open discussion. So 604-822-8648 is the number to call. Place a bid, or pet pledge, I should say. Quick rundown of books. Hen Job, a wonderful art book from Princeton Architectural Press. Dogs and Water, Anders Nilsson. Tatsumi, Goodbye. Adrian Tomine, Shortcomings. Aya Yop City, I am My Family, this odd photo book, art book. Burma Chronicles from Guy Delisle. King City Classics by John Porcellino. World Unfurled, this crazy, weird, unfolding map book. Once Upon a Time, a kid's vampire book that looks really neat, really gorgeous drawings. Jamalti by Ruto Modan. Castaway Pirate, a pirate pop-up book. Come on, pop-up pirates. As well as the box set of local stuff, including You Ain't No Dancer 3, Histrionics, and Robin Bougie's Cinema Sewer. You can get all those books except for local stuff at a $30 bid. For the $60 bid, pledge, you have a choice between two of those books listed or one of the package of local stuff, which includes the Ain't No Dancer, Histrionics, and Robin Bougie. If you pledge $100, you get a choice of four books or two books and a local set, as well as I have one copy left of Joost Halbertsma's crap book. Wonderful Dutch cartoonist sent it to me to be given away, as well as we have one copy left of the Soundtrack to Dark Knight by Hans Zimmer. Check it out. And I'm going to play some more of this interview. This is the rest of the interview with Mia Kirshner. Remember, 604-822-8648.
So we're talking a bit about the ongoing project, the I Live Here project, with the boys that are in the jail.
Yeah, so basically, I feel like the book obviously isn't going to directly help these children in these communities. So I feel a personal responsibility to the people that I met on these trips, because they gave so much of themselves, therefore that's why the foundation was set up. It's very humble, small, very simple, grassroots creative writing programs that give these kids a chance to express themselves, period. So we got funding for the first one, and the first one was in Malawi in a juvenile prison. It's not addressing issues of food and medicine, but what it does address, what I saw directly, is when these kids are asked what they think and what they feel, and they feel listened and heard, they're better and they're stronger and empowered in the community.
Years ago, I used to work on a project with street kids, working with them, writing.
Oh, cool.
And doing frontline work in Vancouver for about 10 years. So that was an interesting project to see kids doing.
It's really gratifying, that stuff. So James will do that one. And then I'll go to Burma to set up a creative writing program in a brothel. And then, of course, the next series of books that begins.
What are some other locales that are interesting?
Pakistan, Iran, Colombia.
Colombia is pretty destroyed.
Parts of it, I think, of this forest are certainly, you know, it's pretty frightening. But so, I mean, basically, like, for us, although I live here, the name exists, the form will always change. The way in which Mike Simons, Paul Shoebridge, James McKinnon, and myself will approach books is to create a book that represents and reflects the journey that we took in the environment.
Are there any thoughts on doing more? One I was wondering about is whether or not you do something, say, on First Nations communities in Vancouver.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, we are Canadian, and our book is locally, the work was done here.
Yeah.
So I imagine that we will go back, and we will. We've talked about the fact that we're really interested in urban stories. So perhaps, definitely.
I just saw some linkages, especially with like a displaced community, and it's just there's.
Sure.
I work in the Napanee side, and you kind of see what people have been going through and what they've been facing.
No, you're absolutely right. I think it's a really, really, particularly with the First Nations, the contribution that they've made to Canada. And then what you see on the east side is pretty.
Yeah. Like I said, the office is on Hastings Street.
It is, so I see it. I mean, it's a story that I think is important to tell. for us, it's the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, provided that we can get the appropriate funding, which is key to all of this.
Are you? Is it the hopes to continue to be published through Pantheon?
Yes, definitely.
They seem pretty into the book.
You know what? I wonder. They've really been. I've heard pretty nightmarish stories from young writers about their publishing companies, and it was basically a group of passionate people at Pantheon who took this book and have supported it so passionately and so beautifully that it's been very exciting, and I'm very lucky. We're very lucky.
Great.
Well, thanks for sitting down with me today.
Thank you.
And we're back. That was the ending of the interview. It got so noisy, just couldn't talk anymore. But thank you so much for joining me, Mia Kirshner, wherever you are. Probably done the book tour now. But check out the book, I Live Here, from Pantheon Books. Reminder, folks, call in, pledge, 604-822-8648. You will not hear this kind of stuff elsewhere. I would love to hear interviews with alternative cartoonists elsewhere, but it's just not happening. I remember Scott McCloud was in Vancouver in the summer, last summer, I guess, a year ago. And he came here and was on the show for the hour, and it was fun. You know, talked to Scott McCloud about his comics and other comics and dorked out pretty heavy. And then we went to CBC, and hung out for a while before he did a signing that night, and I hung with him when he was there. And he goes in the CBC studio, and they start out the interview by playing him the Batman theme song. Now, the only reason I would play the Batman theme song is because I like Link Wray, and there's better stuff to play by Link Wray. The thing about the Ink Studs is that we're not going to kind of... Comics is an art form, and we respect it as such. And to kind of expect all cartoonists will want to be rocking out to comics aren't just for kids anymore. Well, we've known that underground comics started coming out more than 40 years ago, and EC Comics in the 50s, you know, they haven't been for kids for a long time. And if you don't believe me, just look at Robert Crumb. And hey, editorial cartoons. I don't think I see kids reading an editorial cartoon about Lyndon Johnson or something like that, you know? CITR 101.9 FM, Ink Stud, 604-822-8648. We got another pledge, so a couple books are gone. The Guy Delisle book and Yashiro Tatsumi's Goodbye. Thank you very much for bidding, folks, or pledging. Why did I say bidding? I'm on eBay too much, I think is a problem. 604 UBC Unit. So I'm going to play a song, come back on, do another spiel, and yeah. So this is Lucy Neasley, whose book Milk Teeth just came out from Touchstone Books, and it's lovely. I'm so warm, hotter than I was. CITR 101.9 FM. Crimes and Treasons boys are just starting to set up, so I'll do one last pitch for money. People, we love you. Keep listening to Ink Studs. There's no look at slowing down. We have so many great guests coming on in the next couple months. Bruno Modin, Ivan Brunetti, Mark Newgarden, so many. Sammy Harkham, Matt Thurber. I'll be putting up on the weekend an interview by him. Also, Saturday night, if you're feeling like it, at 5 o'clock at Lucky's Comics, Matt Forsyth will be doing a book launch for his book from Drawn and Quarterly called Ogen Gogo. Odd name, but it looks interesting, and I'll be meeting up with him while he's in town. I'll have an interview with him to post probably next month. So CITR 101.9 FM, please call in 604-822-8648. And I'm going to leave us off with a little Robert Crumb. You guys down with some Robert Crumb? They don't care. So, yeah, keep listening. 822-8648.
Yeah.